Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pula. My guest today is Steve Greenfield. And Steve and I are going to have an interesting conversation about the media. So you and I have been discussing it, Steve. Please share your thoughts.
Okay. I think one of the biggest problems that we have as a country, as the population of this country, in terms of how we pursue information that we need to know to be informed voters and informed activists on our issues, is that most people don't understand the way the business model of the media works. And if they had a full understanding of it, and it's kind of like a light bulb thing, you know, as soon as I explain it, anybody listening to it will go, oh, yeah, of course that's how it works. How else could it work? That's what they're actually doing. The basic way that a business operates in a free enterprise system, in a private capitalistic system, where you are exchanging a good or a service in exchange for money, and the success of that operation depends on the money that you're receiving, exceeding the cost of having produced whatever good and service it is that you're selling, right? So we all sort of, you know, it's not like something we think about every day, but in the back of our heads, we all understand how running a business works. You sell something, somebody's buying it, you have to be selling it for more than it costs you to make it, because you got to pay rent, you got to pay, you know, whatever, right? I mean, so that's the nutshell model of how any business operates. And so what you want to know, the simplest way to determine what is the product and who is the customer is by looking at who's paying, right? That's also, if you think about it, an incredibly simple concept. The person paying the money is the customer, and the producer, the business, is providing a good or a service, is providing something to the person who's paying. And so the media not providing information to us, we're not the customer. You turn on your TV, you turn on your computer, you go on your favorite news website, or you go on YouTube, to watch whatever commentators you like, whatever newspapers you're accessing. You're not paying them any money. You're not the customer. The person who's paying them money is the people who own the advertising businesses that advertise on them. And why would an advertiser pay them money? What is the media outlet providing to their actual customers that the customers are paying for? And, again, equally obviously, except we never really think about it very much, is that they're providing the advertiser with access to us. We're watching. We're watching the commercial. Yes, we're watching the news, whatever it is that whatever content brought us into the building, you know, that we came to do. But we are the product, okay? We are then there. And of course, today in digital media, that ability to reach us is much more sophisticated than it ever was before, because they don't depend. Hello. In the old days, you're watching television, you're watching the Super Bowl, the commercial comes on, you can go into the kitchen and make a sandwich, right? You're not obligated to watch the commercial. There was now with digital, the commercial is not necessarily happening while you're watching the content, right? Google has recorded that you're watching the content, and they are now selling access to your computer, to your IP address, to advertisers that will then, have an ad. You'll see this all the time. Like, you're on Facebook, and you're like, gee, how did that some ad suddenly reach me? And then you'll be like, oh, yeah, I was just watching something, or I sent an email on my Gmail account that referred to a topic, and now those targeted ads are coming in. So you don't even have the option of going to another room and making a sandwich when the commercial's playing now. The commercial's going to come all day, every day. It's going to come on your phone. It's got every every single digital device that you use. It's going to get to you. So you are the product. Okay, and so then this creates a problem, right? This is a ratings-driven thing. That's how the media makes their money. And so what they're going to do is not provide you with the information you need in order to be an informed voter or an informed issue activist. They're going to provide you with whatever the analytics on their platform show them is keeping you watching their thing or reading their thing for the longest amount of time. And better yet, if you share their content on your Facebook page or your Twitter, like that goes down too. That shows you're extra interested, and you're actually helping to promote their business model. They're getting paid and you're not. You know, like you're working for them. You're circulating their content. You know, when I was a kid, I was a paper boy on a bicycle when I was 15 for the Daily News in South Queens. And so I was circulating their content, but I was getting paid pretty good money. I was getting paid more than twice minimum wage to go out and do that. You know, the Daily News paid me to circulate their content. You know, now we all circulate for-profit content, and we do it for free. Like, we're actually volunteer circulation employees for the media. So what they're going to present is whatever's going to get maximize those processes, whatever's going to hold us to the website longest, whatever's going to inspire us to make something go viral on their behalf, you know, by bringing it into new markets or through our social media. And so obviously you're going to be getting information. First of all, first and foremost, you're going to be getting confirmation bias, right? You're going to be getting like MSNBC or Fox News. You're going to be getting information that makes you feel good and validates you, you know, as a person and what you believe and the kind of people that you run with that believe those things with you, right? So that's the first thing, because that reward, right? Yeah, this is they're publishing what conforms to my beliefs, and so you feel a sense of reward for that, and that's attractive to you, and you come back to that outlet over and over, because every time you go to them, you feel good about yourself. You know, and the other thing that they're going to do is they're going to, you know, provide you with an endless stream of distractions. They're going to provide you with everything Donald Trump tweeted today, as if that's important information. Does what Donald Trump tweeted today inform me of anything? Does it make me understand healthcare better? Does it make me understand whether we should invade Venezuela? You know, is it providing me with anything that I need to know as a citizen, or is it just stimulating me because they know from past performance that most of us just love the feeling of being outraged of, oh my God, did you see what he just said? And then they'll take that even further. If you look on your news headlines, they're always filled up with, you know, so-and-so draws angry Twitter response for having said blah, blah, blah. That's actually a headline every day on the liberal media and the conservative media. They're not telling you what anything that happened or any piece of information that you need to know. They're just telling you that a bunch of people reacted negatively to somebody else's tweet. And then you open up that article and they'll actually, you know, show you a few of the negative tweets that they pulled from Twitter from people, you know, and this is what professional journalism is now, because that's what holds us in place long enough for the actual customer, which is the advertiser, to reach us. They're bringing us there and they're holding us there. One more thing to add is that, you know, digital media today is primarily, you know, that's where the real action is. You know, the ratings for things like, you know, watching the CBS Evening News, you know, is way, way down. A lot of us are using social media. We're watching YouTube, you know, watching people's live streams, different commentators that we like, stuff like that. And this kind of brings a whole new element into the business model, which is that the media no longer even has to consider the creation of content as one of their input costs. They're now like on pure profit. I think I read recently that Google is running a 30% profit. And the reason for that is that they don't have to make any content. Like at least, you know, the CBS Evening News has to send a news van and a driver and a reporter and a big satellite dish, and these things cost money. So they have to have a studio that they build and maintain and pay rent on their space, and the salaries of the people that are doing the on-air reporting and doing the backroom production to get that on the air. Whereas if you're watching, let's just pick someone I like to watch, Jimmy Dore, for example, right? Or something like that. YouTube did not pay Jimmy Dore money, and give him equipment at their expense to produce the show he puts on three times a week. He's making his content and he's, providing that to Google to give his audience to Google advertisers, and Google doesn't pay a penny for it. So this new system, this traditional media business model has now degenerated to the point where the most successful media platforms don't even have the input cost of the content. You used to watch a TV show. The network had produced the TV show. If you were watching Happy Days, they were producing that show in a studio and paying the actors and the writers. So now the whole thing is just cutting right to the chase, right? The people other people are attracting the eyeballs for them. And then they're just billing, the advertisers for access to their platform, to advertise through their platform. So that's the media, right? That's the media. That's how it operates. That's how it makes its money. And so to get back to the short version right at the beginning, they are not producing information as suppliers with us as the customers. We are what they are producing. Us in our chairs, in front of our computer, in front of our television, on our phone, wherever we are, that's what they're producing. They're attracting us into the stadium. And then their customer, the people that are paying them their money, is the advertisers, right? So that's just what everyone needs to know. You're the customer. You're the product. You're not the customer. So that's the short version of the semester long, media business model. Just saved everybody $10,000 on college tuition.
Okay. Yes, maybe the electoral college math. That was new. That was covered. How would you phrase that? How would you label that?
Since ask yourself, okay, you and I are both in the upper end of the general population age demographics, right? And so ask yourself, when in history has the meeting of the Electoral College ever been on the news? God, what could possibly be more boring than that? Everyone knows on election night how the election worked out. The only exception we ever had to that in modern times since 1876, basically, with Rutherford B. Hayes, that it wasn't known right away was Gore and Bush back in 2000. But even that was ended by the Supreme Court case before the Electoral College got together. Since when is the Electoral College something that attracts eyeballs? And it is now. The interesting thing is that now it attracted eyeballs, even though everyone knew the outcome. The court cases had all failed. The states had all certified their electors, and everyone knew the outcome. And yet millions of people sat there yesterday watching. Every media outlet had a link on it that said, click here to watch, such and such state's electors meeting to cast their votes. And suddenly this became an interesting TV show. And the only reason it was an interesting TV show is because the media had marketed it as an interesting TV show by constantly hyping, Trump's tweets about how he really won the election. But logically, there was nothing that was going to be revealed. It's not like we were, you know, didn't know which way the electors were going to vote and had to sit there watching all day to find. They basically, we were prompted. Our interest in knowing what the Electoral College was going to do was fostered for six straight weeks by the media that was going to be broadcasting for the first time in their histories. When has the Electoral College state-by-state voting ever been televised? And it's not televised because who would watch it? Who would sit there watching it? That's ridiculous. Whereas this year, they made sure that we were all on the edge of our seats as if there was some kind of doubt. Which way is it going to go? Which I better sit there and watch, like you're going to see the last episode of Survivor or something. You know, everything's just been turned into reality television. We knew which way every state was going to vote because they vote the way their Board of Elections has certified the outcome of their election. You'll note that the vote that Biden got, 306, whatever, you know, the vote that each of them got, was exactly what everyone had already recorded was what each of them was going to get. You know, this was like the least surprising reality show outcome in history. You know, spoiler alert, come on, right? Everybody, but they watched anyway. And they all started tweeting and Facebooking, the Electoral College did their vote, the Electoral College. Like, so what? So what? Why was that interesting? It was never interesting before, and that shows you the power of the media to tell advertisers that they've got our eyeballs. We've got eyeballs for you, you know, and we obediently provided our eyeballs, you know.
Okay.
And so, you know, that was another perfect example of the thing that I'm talking about. We have now been manipulated into thinking that the most boring things in the world are interesting enough that instead of going out and walking our dog, we will sit there and provide our eyeballs to the advertisers on all these platforms that are broadcasting the Electoral College vote. And we have become incapable of distinguishing between information that has utility to us as citizens and that which we have been manipulated into finding entertaining. That's the whole reality show ethos. People even said at the time that actual reality shows were first appearing on television, there were plenty of people who were saying, you know what's happening here? They're getting content without having to pay writers. Like, they're just cutting staff, that's all. The content is being provided by the participants. We were all good with that. And so that model was so successful and made so much money by having such low input costs compared to conventional television that, whether or not it was a high quality programming didn't matter, because when you're a corporation, your obligation is return to shareholders, not the quality of the programming. And if one kind of programming is very low quality but makes much, much more money per dollar put into it than some other kind of programming, then that's the kind of programming you're going to make. And maybe the best illustration of this I ever heard was way, way long time ago, man, back in the 60s. Hal Wallace, famous movie producer who produced all the Elvis movies, and somebody asked him, why did he make so many terrible Elvis movies? Why were they all so terrible? When the first couple of movies that were in black and white, they were actually pretty good movies. And he said, well, you know, if I make $10 million making one of those movies, but I make $50 million making Blue Hawaii, which one do you think I'm going to try to keep doing over and over again? You know, so yes, if I make $10 million making Love Me Tender, but I made $50 million making Blue Hawaii, you know, and he was just being honest, right? I'm not an artist. I'm here to make money. This is how I make the most money, from making Elvis movies. It's the same thing. It's basic. It's eternal, right? It never changes. The thing that's going to be done by a for-profit business is whatever it is that generates the most return in revenue for the least investment cost ponied up to make it happen, right? The biggest margin. If Google is making 30% on free content that people are shooting on their cell phones, why would they put together a studio with expensive cameras and writers and celebrities they have to pay? Like, that makes no sense. That would be stupid for them to do that. You know, so that's where we are. That's where we are. Yes, as you said, the perfect illustration. Even the Electoral College, the most boring thing in the world with a completely, absolutely known outcome in advance. You know, who was going to get voted off the island yesterday was known, but we watched it anyway because we'd been programmed, we'd been plied for 6 weeks to believe that this is going to be an important event that we'll finally know who won the election. So tune in. Ah, God, it's just horrible. It's horrifying.
But, you know, you and I are both on Facebook, and many of our listeners are on Facebook. You sign on to Facebook all the time, and there's people who are commenting on what they hear or what they read. So do you think all these people are manipulated for money and this is the reaction of the people?
Yeah, well, I'm not claiming that I'm somehow outside this system, right? I'm not here as a recluse in my home. Yes, I am on Facebook and Twitter. I'm not on the other platforms, but I am on those two. And I do exactly what I was just describing, right? I provide original guide. Generally, as you know, I don't, you know, I sometimes will put up an article, but only to comment on it. But most of the time I'm doing, you know, kind of like what Jimmy Dore does or Kyle Kalinske. I'm providing my own analysis and perspective and sometimes bringing things to people's attention that should be important news that's being ignored by the for-profit media. And I do that because there's no other option. You know, 35 years ago, I would have been standing on a sidewalk passing out leaflets to people, you know, and along with other people who were trying to publicize the same information and actions. You'd go out and do that and you'd try to fan out across the country or across the city, whatever it was you were doing, and get that information out to people. That's not available anymore. You know, the system that is today what it is. And so I have to, you know, at least have a limited participation with that, or else nobody will access my ideas. Nobody will potentially say, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. Kind of like what we're doing right now on this phone call. It's not like I can individually blow up the system. You know, when you're starving, you eat whatever food, you know, they throw into your cage, right? I mean, and you just face that for what it is. You're like, yes, I'm a prisoner, and yes, I'm eating their crappy food, but if I, you know, at least I can live to fight another day. If I didn't do that, I would just starve to death in my cage, and who will have been helped by that? So,
right.
You know, I make use of that. We're here right now. You and I are talking, and later you're going to post this file, right, for people to get, and you're going to post it on a digital platform. And so, yeah, that's in that. But like I said, that's a function of necessity. We are not, you know, the people raking in money off this. You know, we are not the people that have, you know, like if I were an MSNBC on-air person and have 2.4 million Twitter followers so that I could somehow monetize my Twitter presence, which is what they use with their Twitter feeds to deliberately steer their 2.4 million followers to the content that has the advertisers that are getting their eyeballs. You know, it's a very effective business model. So we're dealing with reality here. You know, we have to use what's here because it's the only thing that's here and it's the only thing that people are using. I certainly, you know, it's a shame that Google doesn't pay Jimmy Dore a lot of money for the volume of eyeballs that he generates to their platform. But having him do that out of his own pocket is certainly better than not having him do it at all. at least people are talking about, particularly this week, right? He's suddenly blown up because he's going after the squad in Congress for why they won't demand a Medicare for all vote in exchange for agreeing to vote for Pelosi to have another term as speaker. So suddenly, now, so if he wasn't giving his content to Google, that wouldn't be happening. You know, Google is a monopoly, right? We can't pretend we don't live in a monopoly world. We don't have the tools to overcome those barriers to entry. We can't like open up our own Google and compete with Google. And that's part of the problem with monopoly. That's why we're supposed to have anti-monopoly laws in this country, which we do, but we haven't had an administration interested in enforcing them probably since, you know, AT&T was broken up. How long ago was that, right? Was that like 1970 when Bell Telephone was broken up?
Right.
Of course, it's long since been reconstituted, right? That whole process was reversed. You know, all those mini bells, those baby bells that they called them that were spun off, have all long since rejoined and reconglomerated because we've stopped doing it. And that's another thing as part of this conversation. Why is this happening? Telecommunications Act of 1996, Democrats, Bill Clinton, the Telecommunications Act, which lifted the restrictions on how many originally owned outlets any particular media company corporation could own. Prior to that, if you didn't live in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles, then your ABC or CBS or NBC affiliate was an independent local privately owned station that showed their own local news and everything like that, but were subscribing as an affiliate to the network programming, you know, to Walter Cronkite, to Happy Days, to that's they were just an affiliate by contract. In 1996, Bill Clinton ended that and said that media can be completely monopolized. That the parent companies can now own all the satellite companies directly, and mm-hmm. therefore that content the network content then becomes required. The idea, you know, this horrible right-wing company, Sinclair Broadcasting, a name nobody recognizes, even though it's the largest network in America, because they just didn't change the name of all their stations to, you know, Sinclair News Network. They just let them keep their original names. You know, they own thousands of outlets and have required content that has to be broadcast in each outlet. And Sinclair Broadcasting exists only because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. You know, it's important to bring that up there and remind people we do not get to vote our way out of this problem. This problem of passing new legislation to facilitate monopolization, our refusal to have the Justice Department prosecute existing monopolies under existing monopoly law, this is one of those areas of bipartisan cooperation. This is one of the things we don't have the option to vote no on anymore.
Hey, Steve, our time is up, and I'm sure that this conversation will be, we will talk about this again. So you have been listening to Steve Greenfield. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Steve, I always enjoy talking with you, and have a wonderful day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.